You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody. It's been a minute. Drew Gasparini here from Now We're Talking with me, Drew Gasparini. And I'm just letting you know that you can support this podcast by becoming a patron of our show on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/NWT podcast. And for as little as $5 a month, you can help keep this podcast alive. Forgo the cup of coffee, give it to the podcast. Because podcasting is fun, but it's a lot of work. From booking the star-studded guest list to research, writing, hosting, recording, and editing. For the love of God, the editing. And beyond, this particular podcast is a one-man operation through and through. So for $5 a month, it can go a long way. Not to mention the perks you get by becoming a patron on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/NWT podcast to see how you can support us today. Thanks to our newest patrons, Katie, Elizabeth, Becca, Thomas, Sheena, and Martin. You guys are the best. I appreciate you. I love you. And now what you're waiting for, the mother flippin' show. Hello, it's everyone's favorite new variant, Drew Gasparini here with another amazing episode of Now We're Talking, the podcast that wipes too aggressively. After a little break, we are back and we're back with style because this week my guest is someone with swagger, someone with talent, someone with a knack for puppetry? Yes, that's right. Not only is our guest a bright new Broadway actor currently starring in the mega hit Hamilton as Hercules Mulligan and James Madison, but he hosts his own puppet-centric podcast called It's Time to Meet the Muppets. I had a blast chatting with him and came out of this conversation feeling like a winner, and you will too. So hang on to your tits, because ladies and gentlemen, they's and them's, now we're talking with Fergie Elphilippe.
Welcome to the lowest stakes podcast you'll ever be a part of in your entire life. Fergie Elphilippe, you got one of the greatest names in show business history, I gotta say. Honestly, I love that name, Fergie Elphilippe. So is your real name Ferguson or is it Fergie, like through and through?
No, it's my real name is actually Fergino. It's a combination of my mother and my father's name. My mother's name is Sargine, and my dad's name was in Creole was Fena, but the English translation would technically be Fernando. And the name itself, Virgino, is Portuguese, I believe. And I can't remember. I actually feel like I used to know. I know it means something, but I can't remember.
I think if you look in the book, it says musical theater guy who looks like a linebacker. That's what
there we go. That's what it that's, is. That's what I was told. Definition. That's what I found out.
I gotta say, I really like anybody who's in musical theater and does the song and dance thing, but also looks like they could pick you up over their head and throw you as far as possible. And I think that's kind of the vibe I get from you. Were you into sports?
Yeah, I was into sports in the sense that, basketball was and is huge in my life. When I was growing up, I was really, really into basketball. I played up until, I want to say, starting in first grade, and then I kind of played every year until 10th or 11th grade. Like, I played basketball a lot.
Wow, that's legit. 11th grade is like deep enough in high school. It's like, oh shit, you did take it seriously.
Yeah. Okay. And I think what it was that like, I just really liked the sport and I liked the camaraderie of it. I can't necessarily say I was good. I think I was a good center. I think I was a really, really good center.
Yeah.
But there was something about, I think nowadays people respect centers more than they used to. I think center used to kind of be the position of like, you're big, you're the center. But I think now people now view center as like, oh, that it takes skill to be big. And I had some issues with some coaches that I feel like I didn't gel with a lot of the coaches. And I think a part of it, I think somehow they all knew I was into theater. And
you were bringing the puppets to practice. Is that
Dude,
what it was?
I was bringing my puppets. I was trying to put on a show. I was trying to give everybody a lesson on what it means to go near, far, over, around, under, and through, and no one was having it. And to be honest, I found it pretty disrespectful, if I'm being completely honest.
I was really into basketball until someone grabbed me by the shoulder and said, Drew, you're not supposed to kick the ball. And that's when I kind of...
Yeah. I understand that. But it looks kickable. Why wouldn't
you
want to
hear some embarrassing sports stories? I love this kind of shit.
I love it, man. I'll tell you some too.
Here's my two embarrassing sports stories. I was in sixth grade, I played Pop Warner football. Okay. And it was around this time that I realized two things that I wasn't aware of at the age of 11 and 12, which was I was a large child. I was a hefty kid. So uh-huh. I was put on a team where my teammates were all like 3 or 4 years older than me. And when you're 11, just because of a weight, you know, the weight class or whatever, when you're 11, that is a big age gap. So I was easily the most picked on and like least favorite of the team. And just like 3 months of playing Pop Warner, I was the kicker. They were like, what can we do with this kid? We're going to make you the kicker. And I lost the playoffs single-handedly, like the second game in the playoffs for my team. The coach was like, okay, look, here's A. He's pointing to one direction in the field. Here's B. He's pointing down the middle of the field. And here's C. And if you kick it to C, he's going to run it all the way back because we think that that player is a 45-year-old man. He's going to run it all the way back and score a touchdown, and that we're finished. So you got to kick it to A. And I was like, you got it, coach. So I'm looking at A. I'm aiming for A. I kick it, and it just flies to C. And my dad used to film these games. And it looked like Leave It to Beaver. Like these – the helmets are like gigantic on these little sixth-grade bodies. And this guy is 30 yards in front of me. He runs past the whole – I'm not kidding. He must have been 45 years old, just like annihilating children on the way to the end zone. And I am running after this guy. He's 30 yards ahead of me. He already scores the touchdown, and I still dive, and I just land on my stomach and on my face, and I stay there for 15 minutes. People are running up to me going, Drew, get up. And I was like, I can't face anybody right now. It was so embarrassing.
Yeah, I can't look at anyone.
The next year, I start a 10-year career in tap dance. My other embarrassing story that has to do with sports was, I don't know if you ever did anything like this. I'm certainly not bendy enough for this sport, but I did gymnastics because – there was moment when everybody, I was like, wow, everybody seems to be doing gymnastics. And I kind of missed this trend. It was like karate. Everybody did karate and I never really did karate, but everybody was doing gymnastics. I didn't really do gymnastics. So I said to my mom, Mom, all my friends are doing gymnastics. I want to sign up for gymnastics. I was 9 years old or 10 years old.
Sure.
And she goes, okay, we'll sign you up. So she signs me up and I think I'm going to be in a class with all my friends who've been doing gymnastics. You know what I'm saying? And instead, I have to start in like the beginner's class with like four-year-olds. So I am like this huge child, 9 or 10 years old, and I'm having a miserable time learning how to tumble very slowly. And you know how in those gymnastics studios, they have these like big foam wedges, like these ramps?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So I ran up one day and I did a flip in the air and I landed on my feet and no one saw it. So I wrangled all these four-year-old kids around. So I said, come children, come see this cool older kid do this cool thing. I ran up. This is the best. I ran up this ramp. I did a flip. I landed on my ass and bit a hole directly into my tongue and blood started gushing out of my face, like pouring out of my face. And these, so for
They're
all these
screaming.
These 3 and 4 year olds screaming bloody murder. They're completely terrified. They thought it was a horror movie. It was insane. Hole directly through my tongue. So those are my embarrassing sports stories. And now I live the life of composing Broadway musicals. What are some of your embarrassing sports stories, if you have any?
My favorite one is definitely when there was a brief period of soccer, and mostly because my dad's Haitian and. Or my family's Haitian, but my dad specifically, like a lot of the men in Haiti play soccer. They play Caribbean soccer, and Caribbean soccer is like on the rocks with no shoes. It's like real men, you know what I mean? It's not that pansy shit we deal with here, where we all have cleats and we're in
cleats.
The grass.
No, it's just about the calloused underfoot.
Yeah, it's hot. It's burning outside. No one has on a shirt and people are just like killing it. Right.
That sounds fun. That sounds like a good time.
It sounds like a really great time. And so I'm like, yeah, I want to do that. I want to be like that. And so I go do soccer. I'm terrible at soccer. Oh my God. I'm so bad at soccer. My coach tells it to my face almost every day. He's like, you are terrible. I don't know what to do with you. And I think part of it, again, I don't think I ever hid the fact that I was a theater kid when I went to these like sports practices, because I know for a fact I would be in soccer practice singing Dreamgirls. That was the summer I had discovered Dreamgirls. I remember that vividly because the only song from Dreamgirls that I would love singing was I Want You Baby, which is not even like a song that like everybody knows. I'm just right. sitting in the corner singing this ballad to myself.
Yeah.
And I remember even one kid was like, why are you like this?
Yeah.
And,
I love that it's never, oh, and he also loves musical theater. Athletic no. kids are like, there's something wrong with
They're
him.
Like, what is wrong with you? What you have a problem, dude. And so I started going in and I was not good. And I remember not as punishment, but they were kind of like, look, you're goalie now because you don't know what you're doing.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, that's fine with me. I stand by myself, sing my tunes. And then every now and then I'll just, you know, block a ball. And
yeah, yeah.
The issue is at one point, something happened where I did something wrong and the coach started yelling at me and my whole team started yelling at me. And someone did say, you suck. I remember that very, very blatantly. So what I did was I pretended I was going to block. And then as soon as the other team started coming towards me, I moved to the side and let them score. Uh-huh. And I did it like 4 or 5 times just to make everybody angry.
Sure.
I was not asked to come back the next game.
You were a vengeful goalie. This
was
like
a very vengeful goalie.
Don't fuck with me because I'll let the other team score.
Like, yeah, I was like, I have no stake in this. I have zero emotion attached to this. Idiots.
Idiots.
I'm trying to think of another. I definitely have another one. Oh, my favorite one. It's technically not me and it's not embarrassing, but it's such a funny thing. So my mom was my mom loves watching sports, but like the idea of her kids doing sport outside of basketball was always terrifying to her, especially football or baseball.
Yeah.
And I had watched Sandlot one summer and was like, okay, I have to do baseball. Like that's not even a question. I went through a baseball phase. And I went to tryouts for baseball, and my little brother had watched Sandlot also, and he was also like, I want to do baseball. And it was T-ball, okay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I go to tryouts. I don't make it. My little brother goes to T-ball practice. Everybody makes T-ball.
Yeah.
So she's like, okay, well, you know, he technically made it, so he's going to practice the next day. And I was like, okay, cool. She comes back, and he's like, he's no longer doing T-ball. And I was like, why? She goes, the first day of practice, the parent turns to me and is like, oh, this is going to be so fun. Are you new? And I was like, yeah, I'm new. And she was like, well, you know, this season will be good. Hopefully it'll be better than last year. And she's like, why? And she goes, well, last year someone took a baseball to the teeth and lost 3 of them. And so, you know, hopefully it'll go better. And my mom was so horrified by that statement that as soon as practice was over, my brother got in the car and she says, I have bad news. You didn't get into the team. And he was like, what? He was like, I just had practice. And they were like, yeah, there was a mistake. You're not.
Oh, no.
He was crushed. He was absolutely miserable.
She's like, I mean, she's trying to protect him.
She's trying to protect him.
Of course, but like his dreams are shattered.
Not good. She was like, you're not good enough. So you're not making. She couldn't even just say like, you know, they're canceling T-ball. She was like, they did not want you.
Any risk of you guys getting hurt, she didn't want you guys being a part of that. Did your mom see Spider-Man the musical? Because if she saw that, maybe she'd be like, you can't do this.
No, I think if she did, I wouldn't be speaking with you. Yeah, I'd probably be somewhere. I'd either be teaching or I'd be like an accountant or something.
It's too dangerous on that stage.
Theater was one of those things that my parents were like, you what? They were so utterly confused by it, which doesn't make sense. I was such a extroverted and like I did not shut up as a child.
Yeah.
So like
yeah.
Their shock of me wanting to do theater makes no sense to me. But theater was just one of those things they were like, okay, go do that.
What about the other part of you that I think is like so mega interesting? You and I met doing Shoshana's podcast.
Yeah,
and you were talking a bit about your other fascination. So when your parents, which is, and we're going to get into it, which is puppetry.
Yeah.
And when your parents saw that you like were doing musical theater and they're like, we get that you're loud, but this makes no sense. When they saw that you were like building your own puppets and like getting into that, was it like, well, okay, at least that makes sense?
You
or is it like
that they did not question? And that's the shit that really does not like fly with me, is that like they did not question one bit when I was like,
love
hey.
That there could have been a conversation that they're like, listen, there's no stability in theater, don't go down this path. But puppetry,
they're like, all right, they're like, we see where you're going with this, no problem.
I love it. Where did that fascination come from? I gotta start with that, because I have a similar fascination. I built a puppet. I don't know if I said this to you last time when we talked, mm-hmm. but I built like a life-size Muppet for my nephew out of one
snap.
Of those.
I didn't know this.
Out of one of those springy laundry hampers. You know those things I'm talking about?
Oh, that's really smart. So the collapsible ones.
Yeah, he could like squish his body down, and like he had like I had like genius, like tennis racket kind of things to kind of open his mouth like this. And his name was Mo the Trash Monster. And the big reveal was amazing. I gave it to my nephew, and I think it lives in a closet somewhere. But it was so fun to build, and I've always loved the Muppets. In fact, my second date with my girlfriend who lives with me now was going mm-hmm. to a drive-in movie to see the Muppet movie. And I've just always, my heart grows for these little creatures. So where did you get your start in the love of all of this?
You there?
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, I'm here. I'm here. We froze. So the question was, where did you get started with the love of Muppets, and how did you find yourself going so full tilt boogie into it?
Yeah, I mean, every kid grew up on Sesame Street, and Sesame Street was very important for me as a kid, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
But it actually held a really deep significance in my family in general. Like, my mom revered Sesame Street for many reasons, and so much of that is that Sesame Street was so generational in my family, because, like, my mom watched it when she came to the States. Her nieces and nephews watched it, like, when she was babysitting them, and they were like a lot of my family were born in Haiti and then came to the States, and so Sesame Street was how they learned English. And what was amazing about that was that, like, they associate a lot of their American experience watching Sesame Street, and so much of it because they grew up in New York, and they grew up in Queens, and they grew up in Harlem, and you know, so Sesame Street really genuinely looked like where they were growing up, and so there was such a familiarity, and at the same time, you have this television show that's not just about, you know, learning and really, you know, setting kind of like a basis for education, but it's really about tolerance, and it's about understanding like how people work together on an emotional basis. And I think that there was something about that really tuned in with my mom. And my mom, who's also a big comedy fan, which I'll kind of cover that later. My mom loved the characters, like not even just like the puppets, but the characters she found hysterical. She was obsessed with like Grover. Like, there's all these skits with Grover and this guy named Fat Blue or Mr. Johnson. Mm-hmm. And it's all these crazy sketches where Mr. Johnson is trying to get something done and Grover gets in his way. And she thought those sketches were hilarious. And when I was a kid, for the first 6 years, it was just me, and we had moved to Miami, so I wasn't hanging out with a lot of other kids. As a matter of fact, I never really hung out with other kids when I was home.
Yeah.
There was nobody coming over to the house. We didn't have any cousins who came over or anything like that. I was mostly by myself. So I was always watching TV. And the one thing that anytime I was watching it that like most likely my mom or my dad would like sit down and watch with me, it was usually Sesame Street.
Right.
And I think it's because they genuinely enjoyed watching it. And I think there's definitely something there of like being able to watch something you enjoy and then see these adults who are like taking care of you also enjoy it. I think there's a kind of connection of like, oh, this is something that they identify with. And if this figure who's been taking care of me, if I want to be like them, I guess I have to kind of latch onto this. And then the more just like kind of immediate reason was that I was obsessed with their designs. Like, there was something about the fur and the colors and the way that they were performed that really just grabbed my eye, and I could never get enough of like watching them move.
Right.
And I feel like a part of me knew they weren't real, but I was so captivated by like how they were so lifelike.
Every time I see a Muppet movie or even Sesame Street, whenever an actual human comes into the scene with them, I'm never thinking, oh, look at this human act with all these puppets. Like, it just is this ensemble of people. It just makes sense. They are the most human puppets ever. It's amazing to me how that works.
They sell it so brilliantly.
And, yeah.
I think what actually got me was like when my house started getting internet, when we started getting internet and I was kind of like, I was very fascinated by the computer as a kid. My mom had found all of these like Muppet fan sites because she knew that I was already like pretty obsessed with it and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know what happened, but I eventually saw a photo. sounds like something dirty, but it's not. I saw a photo of like, I'll never forget this shot. It's a photo of the Muppet Show days, and it's the main five performers who are Jim Henson, Frank Oz, Dave Goles, Jerry Nelson, Richard Hunt, Steve Whitmire, six of them. And they're all standing in a line with the characters above them.
Right. Yes.
And it was kind of the first time that I made that connection of like, oh, okay, there are people doing this. And it wasn't right. One of those like, oh no, the characters aren't real. It was actually like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
What is
yeah.
it about that? And like, I kind of like kept looking for pictures of like the behind the scenes stuff. And there was a period where anytime I got on the computer, I only looked up behind the scenes stuff about the Muppets. And it happened.
And how old were you when this was, when this began? How old were you when?
8, 9. I was a kid. I was like a yeah. child. I was very yeah. young. And it really turned into an obsession. And I was just, I could not get enough of this concept that there were people performing these characters. And then once I understood that each performer was performing multiple characters, that's when it really
right.
kind of, I really like lost my mind when I found out that Frank Oz performed Miss Piggy, Fozzie, Animal, Cookie Monster, Bert.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, he plays all of those guys.
Frank Oz is a mind-blowing person. Mind-blowing.
I mean, what a genius, man.
Yeah.
And that, I think that really started taking off. And then I started getting into the world of it. And I started looking up the different producers and the different writers. And I just really became obsessed with everything about that world. And I don't know when it clicked that I was like, well, this is what I want to do. But it was pretty immediate after that I was like, well, I want to be a Muppeteer. I want to be a Jim Henson performer. Like, that's exactly what I want to do. And so around those days, there actually weren't a lot of resources about how to build like Muppet style puppets. So what I had started doing was gutting stuffed animals.
Yeah,
that had like open mouths.
This is when I would start getting worried as a parent, is seeing you take a scalpel to a teddy bear and just taking its innards out.
My mom is like, "What are you doing? These are toys." And I was like, "No, now they're puppets."
Oh my god!
My dad was like, "Just let him be." I think my dad kind of was just like, "All right, he's."
I think if you open the biography of Ted Bundy, the first line is he used to make puppets. That's
Yeah, exactly. It's like Serial Killer 101 uses knife to make puppets.
If you see your kid just absolutely destroying toys, putting his hand inside of him and manipulating his mouth, report this child. I could talk about Muppets all day. The stupid question that I'm sure you get all the time, and you have a podcast about Muppets. What is the podcast called?
It's called It's Time to Meet the Muppets. I know there's going to be like at least 4 or 5 people listening to this being like, no, he doesn't. He hasn't updated it in months.
Oh, so it's been a minute since you've done a new episode.
I've taken an intentional pause just to kind of get back, because when I started to really take off with it, that's when we got the news that we were going back to Broadway. And that, so
Hamilton was coming back.
Well, that Hamilton was going back to Broadway. And so I was like, okay, let me just take a break. And in the new year, I'll start making new episodes again. So it's coming back.
Yes. So everyone relax. Relax. Those 3 or 4 people who might say something, just chill out.
They pulled out their quills and they were about to write a strongly worded letter, but you can relax them now.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's getting back to this little tiny show called Hamilton. Some people
very,
have heard about it.
A startup show. We're still raising money.
Yes. Investors, if you're listening, please get in touch with Lin-Manuel. I hear he's hurting for the opportunity the money. I think he's
and
struggling.
And the money. There is not enough money into this show. Any pennies or spare
is it tacky? Is it tacky to just email Lin and say, can I have some of your money? Is that a tacky thing?
It's dependent on how you approach it. I think if you email him and say, hey, how's it going? Great job on Encanto. I really enjoyed the music of that film. Tick, Tick, Boom was, can I have your money?
Yeah.
I think if you have to find a way to really like lean it in there.
Yeah.
And you also have to wrap it up quick. So it's like Tick, Tick, Boom was, can I have your money? Andrew Garfield is so talented. And I think that the Oscars will work in your favor. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. If I squeeze in three, can I have your money? And I like that. It's not some of your money. It's just, can I have your money?
No, can I have your money? Because you always, when you negotiate, you want to start high. And then you can compromise on the way.
Because obviously there's some wiggle room on either side.
Right. Because his response might be, don't ever email me again. That how dare you? I don't understand why you thought you were slick. And then you can email and go, I'm so sorry.
I
didn't mean to disrespect you. I just thought that we could have a conversation. Can I have your money? I just feel that there's a chance that we really, really could. And instead of, can I have your money? I actually should change. Just like, okay, can I have 1/3 of your money? Because now we're moving into, and you can start negotiating. That's the cool thing about negotiating. You don't have to have permission from the other party.
You can
just start asking.
I really like the persistence. So if he doesn't get back to that email, eventually I'll send another email that says per my last email, but the subject line is just dollar signs.
It's just dollar
signs. So he'll get it. I mean, he'll understand.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Now that you're back in and you're playing Hercules Mulligan and James Madison, do you have a preference? Which one you play?
Someone just asked me this.
Yeah.
And I was like, I used to be like, no, I love them both equally, which is true. I have no issue claiming James Madison is my favorite between the two. No question.
Yeah. He seems like there, even though, I mean, Battle of Yorktown, Hercules really tears it up. I mean, he really comes in and has
the best rap in Act One.
I want to stand every, when I'm listening to it on the subway and I hear that part, I'm like, oh shit, I got to stand up. It's so energy fueling, but James Madison as a character to play, I would imagine would be so much fun because you're kind of this, he's kind an instigator. He's like, you know what you should do, Jefferson?
He
throws a knife in the middle of the group. He goes, why don't you guys fight it out?
Madison's the best because what a lot of people don't realize about Madison is that he literally is the puppet master behind everything, like in terms of like he is like controlling it all and no one knows it. Like he is constantly like, what if we I do this thing in the show where right after the Adams administration and we're all like, well, Hamilton's lost his mind. Like, what do we do? I pull out the check stubs that we try to bust Hamilton with and I just present it to Thomas's face. And then Thomas goes, let's let him know what we know. And it's my favorite choice because the idea that Thomas is like, here's my idea.
Yes, yes.
Physically from Madison. Let's go bust him. And Madison is just like,
good idea. I wonder where you got that idea.
Where you got that idea from. Oh my God. No, I love it. I love Madison. I love how quiet he is. I love how unassuming he is, but he is truly probably one of the I won't say he's sick, because one of the reasons that Madison was so well liked was because he had a really great ability to communicate to all kinds of different people. Like, he was able to really talk to everybody. I actually just saw this TikTok like not too long. A friend of mine sent this TikTok of this girl being like, you know, James Madison was our most socially awkward president. Here's why I stan him. When George Washington first came into presidency, he was like, I want to send a letter to all of Congress to just be like, hey, you know, I'm so excited to be working with you guys, but you know, I'm not a good writer. Madison, how would you feel about writing? And Madison was like, sure, I guess I'll write it. So he writes this great letter, sends it to Congress. Congress gets it, and they're like, oh my God, what a regal and stunning letter we just received from George Washington about him wanting to work with us. We should write him back. Yeah, we should, but none of us can really write. Hey, Madison, yeah, would you mind writing a letter back to Washington? And Madison, being so awkward, was just like, sure. And they're like, yeah, just tell Washington how excited we are to work with him.
So he is corresponding with himself.
To himself. And he does it back and forth like four or five times. So he's just writing himself. And I think that is – he's so good at like being able to talk with everybody.
Wow.
And that story – I think that story is so genius.
But that is amazing. That is actually kind of amazing. That should have made it into Hamilton.
That's its own show.
That's amazing.
That's its own one act musical.
I would love if all the characters in Hamilton got their own individual spin-offs. I think that would be really
That'd fun. Be a great project for Lynn. You know, he's real hell bent for work right now. So
I know
think
he's what not he busy,
do,
so he could no, use he, this.
He's really, you know, it's kind of disappointing. You know, you would think after Hamilton he would kind of start doing other stuff, but he's kind of just like relaxed it back and let the good fortune of how this show has gone just like soak in. And he's not really artistically trying to challenge himself.
I'm feeling motivated right now to email him and say something along the lines of, hey, I have an idea for your next project. It has to do with a spinoff. Can I have your money? But with all the characters, Hercules Mulligan, all these people getting their own spinoff, can I have your money? And let me know what you think. Signed, Drew Gasparini, can I have your money?
I love that. I like that you signed with, can I have your money? Because you always
want
to leave
it on
note.
It's all connected.
Note.
I think can I have your money is all one word.
It's all one word.
Yeah.
And
no
like
hyphens. It's just, it's subliminal.
And you repeat
enough
it in case he misses it. Like, that's the whole point. Like, in case he misses it the first once or two times. Like,
what am I new at, like, asking somebody for their money? Come
we
on.
All know how to beg for
we
money.
We all know how to beg for money. Jesus Christ. I'm
this
an artist, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
Fergie, can we play a stupid little game?
Yes, I love stupid games.
Okay, the game is not really a game. It's just I ask you a series of stupid questions, and then we get into a portion called the most impossible question.
I love it.
And it's like those answers are just gun to your head. You have to answer no matter how painful the answer might be, okay?
Okay.
So first question for you is, what was your first car?
My first car was a 1996 Nissan Sentra. It was small white car that lived in my brother's backyard that he gave to me for my first summer stock gig. And I love this car so much.
I love it.
It was so tiny for my big self, but I adored this car. It was so old, but it was so great.
Did you name the car?
Yes, I named it. Oh, what did I name it? I named it Napoleon.
Napoleon, great.
I think that was Napoleon.
That's a great name for a car. My first car was a Bronco 2. I think it was a 1988 Bronco 2. Very top heavy,
nice
very
car.
Unsafe. When you turn on the AC, black smoke came out of the vents. No joke. And when I was driving down to LA for college, it broke down on the way to LA in such a way that I had no brakes. I had to pull on the emergency brake in order to get this thing to stop in a mechanic in the auto body shop. Like I almost hit a wall. Like I was like just rolling in, foot off the gas until I was slowing down enough to rip that thing up.
Oh my God.
Completely broke down. And I named the car Chef. It was named Chef.
Chef. Oh,
Chef.
That's great.
I thought it was just the whole thing was falling apart. It was horrible.
That's beautiful.
Next stupid question for you. You're back in the show, which is so exciting. And I'm sure it's, you know, it's weird times still, but like, it's nice to see people showing up. And I'm sure for Hamilton, especially, people are showing up. What is your morning routine now that you're back in the show? What do you do on the day to day to keep the mind in check, the body in check, all those things?
That's a great question. Today's a two show day. So today typically I get up a little bit later. I'll have some coffee. I'll try to clean up around the house. I probably won't, but I'll try. And then I'll just head down to the theater. We have to get down to the theater pretty early so that we can do testing. We do PCR testing every day, and we even do some 30-minute PCR testing if need be. So I try to get to the theater about an hour 15 early, and then do the show. On a regular show day, I'll usually get up, I'll go to the gym, I'll come back home, I'll, you know, cook some lunch, and then I'll prep dinner, which is a very new thing I started doing. What I'll do is the show ends, you know, pretty late. And my instinct is that when I come home, I'm like, oh, I don't want to go and prep to make dinner. It's so late. And then I end up ordering. What I started doing now is I'll prep dinner in the daytime. I'll season all my things. I'll prepare it in the little things and I'll put them in the fridge. So that way, as soon as I get home, all I have to do is preheat the oven, boom, throw it all in.
You like to cook?
I love to cook. I very much love to cook.
Oh yeah, that's a meditation for me.
Very much. I'll put on my podcast. I listen to a lot of different like comedy podcasts and stuff like that, and a lot of interview podcasts.
Yeah.
So I'll get home. I usually start listening to them on the train, and then by the time I'm home, I'm so into it, I don't want to turn it off to watch TV. So I'll just put on my speaker and I'll just kind of, you know, be in my zone.
I love it. Love it. When you're going to the gym, what's the weirdest thing you've ever seen at a gym? You know, when you're at a gym and you see someone who's like on a bike, but they're wearing khakis and you're like, what the fuck is that guy doing here?
Yeah. I see lots of weird things. I go to a gym in Harlem, and not to knock Harlem because I love living here, but I see lots of weird things every day. When I used to work at Planet Fitness on 125th and Malcolm X, shout out.
Sure.
you know, that's a interesting breed of place.
Where
I found lots of, if anyone knows me, they know I'm deeply, deeply captivated by the culture of masculinity, because I think it's so interesting how men choose to express themselves. And the thing that I'll never understand to this day is I'll be on a machine and then I'll just start hearing screaming, like
screaming.
Not just like yelling like, oh, like, no, I'm hearing like, and I turn around and it's a group of big beefy men filming each other doing free weights.
It's the filming each other that I think is a little pornographic, right? It's
that's really what that, and I'm like, if you're filming yourself or you have one person filming, I'm like, I get that. Some people are trainers, like you all look great. If I had pecs that were the size of, you know, 18 wheelers, I would love to have someone film me. But there's eight of you.
Yeah.
None of you have shirts on.
Yeah.
Only one person is sweating. I don't think the rest of you are working out. I think you're literally there just to scream at this person who's lifting.
They're the crew. That's the camera crew. And when they all leave the gym, you know what they're trying to do? They're trying to get in a fight.
They're trying to get in a fight. They're looking for someone to fight.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I was at the gym a couple years ago. And I saw this guy, I was on a treadmill, and I'm mosey, okay? I'm not about to sprint, all right? I got short legs.
I don't go to the gym to train.
I have room in my legs for knees.
I go to move.
Yeah, I just bring a sweater too. I'm not there to kill myself.
Right.
This guy next to me, though, he took it a notch lower than me, and he had a 2-liter of Mountain Dew, and all I heard, all I heard was, and it was the guy next to me opening like a 2-liter, chugging it on the treadmill. I couldn't believe it. And he was just wearing, you know, like jeans with a belt and a tucked in shirt. He did not belong in this gym.
That's what I really love.
I think he thought he was on the subway.
People wearing jeans at the gym, really, that's like a new level for me where I'm like,
oh,
wow, you, what are you doing here?
Like, it is what's the goal? Beyond cluelessness. And it's always in like a Planet Fitness or a Blink or one of these.
Yeah.
The cheap subscription.
The cheaper subscription ones. Yeah, exactly. It's you meet all kinds of characters there, man. It's truly wild. But now I go to New York Sports Club, and so it's not as crazy. I still see some craziness, but it's not as crazy.
So you get that Broadway paycheck now, and now you're like, okay, I'll go to
Now instead of $10 a month, I can afford $30 a month. Yeah.
And for your dreams, kids.
That's right, man.
And just to say, this is your Broadway debut, correct? Is Hamilton?
This is my Broadway debut.
That
yes,
is
indeed.
So wild. I mean, big congrats. Insane, man. A little late thank to say, but like that is just so.
No, thank
I'm
you.
So happy
it still blows my mind every single time I talk or even think about it. You know, it's so easy to get into the grind of like, here's my 8 shows. I'm doing my thing. You know, blah, blah, blah. But every now and then I think about it and I'm like, I'm in freaking Hamilton.
It's like being asked if you're a musician and someone's like, hey, do you want to be in the Beatles real quick? You're like, fuck.
That's exactly the equivalent.
It's a phenomenon, you know?
That's exactly the equivalent. It's absolutely insanity. And I don't think about it until my stage management like stopped by while during the show and they were like, hey, can you keep next Friday? I can't say why, but they were like, next Friday morning, can you keep it open? We're doing a social media thing. And they told us what it was. And I was like, that is so damn cool.
Yeah.
I like had a moment where I was just like, this is really cool.
You gotta, like, you have to have these constant reminders of, you know, this is not even a comparison, but me and my girlfriend were watching Cobra Kai last night and there's all these references to Karate Kid. And I have to stop myself sometimes and be like, I can't believe I'm a part of this in any way at all.
Dude.
This is so much bigger than me. it's wild how small I am in the scheme of it, but I get to be a part of this insanely popular universe that's been created.
Right.
Just like you, Howard, with Lin-Manuel, that hack who needs a job.
It's amazing.
All right, moving on to another silly question, and these are just easy low balls. We love the Muppets. We've talked about the Muppets, Sesame Street, the whole thing.
Love it.
Give me your favorite. I'm a Sam the Eagle guy.
Great.
Who's your Muppet of choice?
This is always a very difficult question for me. I think it's Animal. Animal was always somebody I gravitated to as a kid. I think because he could not speak. Like there was no, had only like a few words, but my favorite definition is from Frank Oz. He was like, he only lives by 5 words, sleep, drums, food, sex, and pain. That's all you need to know to describe Animal.
Truly a rock star. I mean, honestly, truly
a rock star.
That's part. And wasn't he? He was based off of Keith Moon from The Who, is what I heard.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. That's the
lore
whole
behind Animal.
Amazing.
If I was, and I listen, I know what my voice sounds like. I listen back to these podcasts and I cringe. My anus just puckers up. It's a horrible sound that comes out of
my
face.
Terrible.
But
that's not true.
If I was made, and look at the color hoodie I'm wearing. It's like a Cookie Monster color. So if I was a Muppet, if I was turned into a puppet and you had to voice me, what would be the voice you would give me?
If I had to turn you into a, let's really break this down, okay? So if we're going to turn you into a puppet, I would guess you're going to be a humanoid. You'd probably be a humanoid type of puppet, kind of like a Scooter, kind of like a Dr. Teeth or a Floyd. These are like humanoid puppets, not a monster, not a frog, not a bear. You're a humanoid puppet. Let's go with Blue. You'd probably be a little Blue. You give me a Blue vibe.
Thank you.
You'd be a hand and rod puppet. You wouldn't be a live hand. You'd be a hand and rod puppet.
Okay.
I'd give you a voice like this. Like there, it'd probably be a little bit something like this, you know. But he'd be one of those guys. He'd be like a guest spot for like the Electric Mayhem, and he'd be like, you know, one of like the guest singers or something, or a guest pianist or something like that. And the Electric Mayhem fucking loves him. Like they're obsessed with him. He's like one of the. I think he'd be one of those guys. And he probably has some really cool shit going on. He's probably got some nice glasses, like a leather jacket. Like you'd be one of those humanoid puppets. I'd be like, when can I play Drew again? Give me a sketch where I can be Drew.
Muppet Drew is so much cooler than actual human person Drew. thank you for bringing my Muppet self to life. That's a joy for me. Honestly, I liked how you got in the voice. That was great. Most impossible questions, just a handful for you. If you could only do one, knowing that James Madison is your favorite, if you could only do one, you could do James Madison right now for what you're paid, or you could do Hercules Mulligan, but you get like $100 more a week. Which would you pick?
I love that it's $100
But yeah, not it's not like $1,000. I mean, like,
it's not a crazy upgrade. It's just like, you know, we'll give you a little something.
But since, if you have a shoes thing, you could buy shoes every week if you wanted. Like,
that's fantastic. I'll stick with James Madison.
All right,
I would love to do that 8 times a week. That would be so great.
There's not a world where I'll be able to play Hercules Mulligan, but I want to do Yorktown. I just want to do that moment. Dude, it's so
dude,
fucking.
You serious. Should do a concert where that's all you do, where you don't even do all of Yorktown. You just do the rap.
Watch how fast my career ends right after that. Too. Just wait till the Hamilton fans.
Drew Gasparini is over party for his use of Yorktown in his concert.
Oh my God. Well, if I'm going to go down, I'm going in a blaze of glory, baby.
That's right, man.
Okay. You become the president of the Jim Henson world. You're the president. You're in charge of all the Muppet creations. That's Sesame Street. That's the Muppets. All of it. Mm-hmm. And you have to make some layoffs. Do you fire all the Muppets, meaning the original gang, or do you cancel Sesame Street?
Oh, that is such an awful decision.
I know. These are really tough questions.
Now, I hate to be this person, but we have to get into the technics of it. So technically, the Jim Henson Company does not own either Sesame Street or the Muppets anymore.
Okay.
They sold those rights off. But let's say we're in a world where I'd still
Disney
those
has
characters.
That, right? Is that Disney?
Disney
now?
Has that now. Now, if I cancel Sesame Street, I'm making this too complicated. We have to wrap this up. I would say I would probably – people are really going to be mad at me for this. I would cancel Sesame Street, and here's why.
Yes.
Sesame Street is a wonderful program. It has changed drastically over the years. Nowadays, mm-hmm. it's only a 30-minute program. There's no sketches. There are very few sketches. It's very curriculum-based. There's not a lot of room for improv or comedy or things like that, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's very much changed. And what I would love to do instead was I would cancel Sesame Street as it is, because there's 52 great seasons of content that you can show kids and put on reruns for the rest of your life.
Yep.
And then I would make a show that's just sketches with those Sesame Street characters. That's all I would do. Because I think that would be so fun. I think everybody would love that. There's enough educational material out there that we don't have to worry about it. We can just rerun over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And then make some new shows where these characters get to come and just play and just have a fun time.
That's a really astute and thought about answer. I feel like you've been asked all these questions before because you have.
I probably have.
What is your least favorite song in Hamilton?
My least favorite song in Hamilton, the song that I always skip when I listen to it, is probably, this is so sad, Take a Break. Only because like I have no involvement in it.
That's
the one after the cabinet battle. It's with Hamilton and Angelica and Eliza, where he tells them, I'm not going on vacation with you. I have to make this plan.
Okay. Yeah. I get it.
And it's only because I'm not involved in it. But if I were to ever play Eliza or Angelica or Ham, that would probably be one of my favorite songs. That's like such a great actor song to have. But me personally, I always skip Take a Break.
You want to hear mine? And I'm already prepared for the onslaught of hate I'm going to get for this.
I can't wait.
Burn.
Oh, interesting. I get that.
I
understand
like,
then.
I just for some reason it doesn't fit into the world I've immersed myself
that
in
you've your...
at that moment. You know, it's like all of a sudden we're in an actual like musical, not a different game.
Not a different thing.
That's where I am. And I feel like
I like that.
Because that's in everybody's book. They're gonna be like, who the fuck is Drew Gasparini anyway?
If you ever want to get canceled, dude, all you gotta do is just tweet that out, man. Isn't that amazing? Isn't it amazing to know that like it's just so like if I ever want to get canceled, there's like 7 things I know I can do, and I'd be like,
yes,
dude,
no,
it's over.
It's like putting a cyanide pill in the back of your teeth. It's like all I gotta do is push send and I'm done, you know.
exactly. Oh my God.
All right, last stupid question for you. Miss Piggy, Gonzo, and Rolf, which one of those Muppets, if you had to pick to never exist, who would it be?
Think of the,
out of the three that I just
terrible.
Named. Because they're all part of the original crew, And they all have a cultural significance. Miss Piggy, Gonzo, and Rolf. Rolf was like, most songwriters I know are like, the reason I play piano is because of Rolf. And I'm one of those people. So what would you say? Miss Piggy, Gonzo, Rolf, a Muppet that never couldn't exist. They had to be omitted from history.
Wow. That's so sad.
I know. I like to end on a real bummer. Like, and on a real drag.
Fuck a high note. Why would you ever? I would say I refuse to get rid of Miss Piggy. She's too much of a cultural icon.
Mm-hmm.
Rolf is so hard because he's been around since Jimmy Dean days. Like, he is truly an icon. I think it would be Gonzo. And Gonzo is one of my favorites, but I think it would be Gonzo only because Gonzo, oh God, this is so hard. Gonzo is a really great character. He's so unique and on his own, but I think there might be other characters. I don't know. I'm not going to explain it. I'm going to get in. There's going to be so many Muppet fans throwing bricks at my house. Let me just stop it there. I think I'd probably get rid of Gonzo. No, it'd be Rolf.
Rolf's gone. Rolf's gone. We get rid of the musician and we keep the alien that fucks chickens.
I need, if I'm gathering this information correctly. Yeah, I just think that kind of like sexual tension, if without it, it really kind of crumbles what the Muppets are really about. If we don't have that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I gotcha. The Muppets are all about sexual tension. Well, you heard sexual it here tension. First, folks.
Yes. Jim Henson Company calls me later. Yeah, we've considered hiring you after some of your statements. Please never call us or talk to us again.
Please, Jesus Christ. Fergie L. Philippe, thanks for coming on and chatting with me. I enjoy you. I enjoy what your interests are. I enjoy your talent. And I look forward to working with you on a creative and collaborative level one day. And I can't wait to hang. I bet if you and I cross paths in a room, we'd actually be like,
we'd be
hanging by the bar, you and I.
Absolutely, dude. Well, let's make that happen. Thank you so much, man. It's such a pleasure to be talking with you again and hanging with you again, man. I'm so excited. I actually never got to tell you, my friend auditioned for Karate Kid and sent me he was like, you know, let's be real, like he said, either like, guys, they're making Karate Kid a musical, and I was like, hold on. I was like, guys, listen, I know Drew, I'm sure the music is gonna be great. And he was like, okay. He I think calls me like an hour later and is like, bro, this music. He was like, listen, dude, he's like, I know I was ragging on it, but bro, then he sent me the audition tape and he is like going so hard.
Yes. Oh yes, I love it.
I'm laughing. I watch the video all the time because he was ragging on it, and then in the video he's so into it.
Was it the dance audition?
It was the dance audition. Yes, oh my god. Yes. He was so into it. I always watch it when I need to pick me up because it makes me laugh so much how he loves it so much. Dude, no, I'm so excited to see what comes of that. And I can't wait to hang with you soon, dude.
Absolutely, man. Well, until that day happens, and hopefully it is soon, have a great rest of your day. Keep kicking ass. Everybody go see Fergie in Hamilton, and his podcast will be up and running again soon. And whatever else he's got going on, just follow him on his socials, which are, what's your handle?
My handle is at Fergsters95. That's at Fergsters95. That's on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram.
Go find the man. All right. Thanks so much, Fergie. We'll talk to you soon. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Now We're Talking is a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network, and you can find out more about me and this podcast at bpn.fm/nowwe'retalking. We're also on Instagram at @NWTPodcast or on Twitter at @NWT_pod. A big special thanks to Fergie L. Philippe for coming through and talking to me. I really like you, man. Can't wait to hang in person. Make sure to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your fabulous podcast. And if you feel like supporting, be sure to check us out on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/NWTPodcast. Keep tuning in every week for more amazing guests, and we'll catch you next time. Bye, everyone.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.